Keith Jennings is president and CEO of the African American Center on Global Politics and Human Rights. A past recipient of the Interfaith Alliance Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Award, Dr. Jennings worked closely with Congressman John Lewis, as well as legendary civil rights leader, the Reverend Cordy Tyndall Vivian, both of whom passed away on July 17th. Characteristically, John Lewis's family refrained from announcing funeral plans until the Reverend Vivian was laid to rest, so as not to distract from memorializing this great man, and we'll follow that example in my time with Keith Jennings today. Keith, you're a good friend. You have been for a long time. And I thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Reverend Gaddy. I have followed the work that the Interfaith Alliance is doing, and State of Belief in particular, and you're making a historic contribution.
Well, thank you, sir. What do we need to know about C.T. Vivian?
C.T. was passionate about the advancement of African Americans and also the poor. He believed that everyone should everyone's rights should be acknowledged and respected. And that's why he was such a fearless advocate for freedom and justice and equality. He was, as you know, a very distinguished looking gentleman. He almost looked like a professor, and he loved his family, and he loved his community. There are only a few people whose names are synonymous with integrity, and C.T. Vivian was one of those people.
The unforgettable image of Reverend Vivian falling to the ground struck by that notorious sheriff on the Selma, Alabama courthouse steps and then rising back to his feet with unimaginable dignity to continue his argument, that'll never leave me. What was C.T. Vivian like outside the spotlight?
C.T. always gave other people an opportunity to shine. And that's why even today, many people are not aware of all of the work that he did. But I wanted to just comment on that moment because something happened there when he was confronting Sheriff Jim Clark. As he rose back up and he personified the dignity and the discipline of the movement. Most people would have just jumped up and started swinging and getting arrested. But he also said something to Jim Clark afterwards. He told him, first, you don't have to brutalize us. We're just here to make sure that people can exercise their constitutional rights. And it almost in an afterthought, he then asked Jim Clark, what kind of people are you? And that message sort of typified what Black people in the Deep South were wondering at that time when their rights were being trampled upon simply because they wanted they were pro-democracy activists. They wanted to exercise the rights that the Constitution said that they had. Outside of the civil rights work, C.T. Was a very principled person. He always made time to give younger people an opportunity to learn, to make mistakes. But he knew that the baton needed to be passed. But more than that, he showed that same kind of courage that he showed when he confronted Jim Clark. For me personally, because we had a Nashville connection, C.T. was a mentor as well as a colleague. I worked with him at the Center for Democratic Renewal. It had morphed into the CDR from the Anti-Klan Network. And I first met C.T. Back in 1980 in Greensboro when he was moderating a rally that was being held in one-year anniversary of some protesters who have been killed by the Klan in the state of North Carolina. And that's the kind of person he was. He was just always courageous and disciplined. And he personified that righteous indignation of the civil rights movement.
Barack Obama honored Reverend Vivian with the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2013. What did that mean to a man who spent his life in the moral struggle for racial equality and justice to receive that kind of recognition from the nation's first black president?
Well, it meant everything. CT was a very humble person, but his life's work was being validated. I watched that moment, and you can tell he was reflecting on that work at that very moment. And in a way, President Obama, was a product of some of the work that he did, as well as black members of Congress. When CT began, when he joined SCLC, there were only two black members of Congress. But today, there are over 55 members of Congress who are African-Americans. And the passage of the Voting Rights Act changed the face of the South. There are over 5,000 black elected officials in the South today because of the work that he was able to do. So that moment crystallized his long career. And that's something that I think is an example for young people to understand that you don't stop just because you may gain some notoriety for a particular moment in history. Reverend Vivian continued to work. We conducted workshops together on unlearning racism when I was at Amnesty International. And he's just a phenomenal person because he would pull things out of the air that mattered, that no one else was paying attention to. President Obama also recognized that 2013 was a special year because that was the year that the U.S. Supreme Court stripped the Voting Rights Act of Section 5, which was a key section that made sure that some of the things that we're experiencing right now wouldn't be happening. Moving polling stations without announcement, having a different kind of oversight for some polling stations and not others. No rhyme or reason to why one polling station would receive so many machines and others might receive only one or two machines. So this is a problem in one way of honoring C.T. Vivian, but also John Lewis would be to pass the bill that the House has passed, renewing those provisions of the Voting Rights Act.
Keith, I often wonder what someone like the Reverend Cordy Tyndall Vivian must feel after a lifetime of working for equality and justice to look around and see police killings of unarmed black men, to watch courts disable the Voting Rights Act, to read about majority white churches dismiss the call for justice from groups like Black Lives Matter. Do you know how the Reverend Vivian faced these heartbreaking realities late in his life?
Well, I, because of my travels out of the country, I spoke to him. It was about 2.5 years ago. He remained hopeful. He knew that there were people who continued to resist change, or they were maladjusted to progress. And he would sometimes remind me that the Goldwater campaign in 64 was anti-civil rights, but it didn't stop the progress. And that you have to understand that the struggle is long and complex and very difficult, but that the march of history will go in the right direction, even though there may be some setbacks. In a way, he lifted up what Dr. King said, that in his last speech in Memphis, that we were going to face some difficult days. And I think these are those difficult days, because if you think about King's last book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, it's clear that the present administration has selected chaos as their strategy to win a second term. And the open appeal to racism and racist symbols, on one hand, it leaves no doubt that he would have been fighting with the Confederacy to keep African-Americans enslaved. But on the other hand, he just brings shame to the office of the presidency by speaking in the manner that he's speaking, blaming Black Lives Matter and unseen Mexicans for these recent spikes in the coronavirus pandemic, rather than being honest enough to admit that his administration has failed. So I think that Reverend Vivian wasn't bitter that he had fought hard to make social change, that others are now working just as hard to undo or to turn the clock back. And whenever they get into trouble, they will hit the race card, either by aiming at President Obama or by creating these straw men to stroke fear and to make people think that this is a zero-sum society, that the progress being made around acknowledging people's rights, whether it's LGBTQ rights or the rights of other national minorities, somehow takes something away from the majority. And so I think Reverend Vivian wanted us to recognize that, as difficult as it might be right now, that they face more difficult circumstances. And that may be a lesson that the president doesn't understand, because he doesn't understand history.
Keith, when did you first meet John Lewis?
I met Congressman Lewis in 1977. He came to Fisk University, where I was a student, to speak.
What was your first impression?
Well, I mean, because I was a student of history, I knew who he was and what he had done. But your first impressions are that this is a rather down-to-earth guy, no pretense, someone who, you know, who really was a sharecropper's son. John always remembered his humble beginnings, and I think he had a way of inviting people into his space. Even though he was such a giant of a man, though he was small in stature.
I always had the sense that Selma was never far beneath the surface for John. Was that also your impression?
Yeah, John paid a heavy price of not just being beat on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, but he had been beaten in South Carolina. He had been thrown in prison in Mississippi, and had been attacked on the Freedom Rides. But the beating on the Edmund Pettus Bridge almost took his life. And I don't know what it's like to see your life flash before you, as he said. But I think that while it had the physical scars on him in terms of the trauma, I also believe it left a kind of determined personality. Every time I saw him, it was clear that he was living a very real purposeful life. And that was something that he always wanted others to emulate, that we really don't have a lot of time to waste. And I think that that's what crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge left with him, besides the brutality that he experienced. Let me just say that he was clearly a person of courage, of his convictions. I mean, to endure the jails and the beatings, even threats of lynching in Selma, the mob violence that took place on the Freedom Rides. But John always remained committed to nonviolent social change. He never wavered from that. Others in SNCC did. But John, even at the end, he was still continuing to struggle for social justice and saying to the Black Lives Matter movement people that you can make a difference and you don't have to be a saint. You just have to continue and to stay committed to the change that will take place. And I think that he really demonstrated that all people were born free and equal in dignity and rights, and that's what he stood for.
Keith, recently I saw a picture of civil rights leaders getting together to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act in Atlanta. What a gathering that was. Ambassador Andrew Young, Martin Luther King III, Reverend Jesse Jackson, Dr. Joseph Lowery, no longer with us, Ms. Helen Butler, Mr. Wade Henderson, Congressman John Lewis, and you, Dr. Keith Jennings. In a situation like that, a gathering like that, how was John treated? How did the others look at him, and what did they want to say to him? Just how did he get along in that situation?
You know, their personalities, institutionalized personalities even, and John was one of those. But in that setting, the thing that I remember is how humble he was. He never had any pretense to try to outdo any one of those other people that you mentioned. And what he had to say, people listened to. And there was a collegiality among that group. They shared something special that someone like myself could see but couldn't feel the way they did. My colleague, Martin III, always talked about how his mother and his father said that John Lewis was someone he could trust. And so I could see how Martin deferred to John and to some of those other leaders, especially Ambassador Andrew Young, who played a big role in his life. But I think that when I look back at that moment, it appears to me that Congressman Lewis represented the moral authority that the civil rights movement did, and that John was still fighting. So was Reverend Jackson, but John was still fighting at a policy level in the U.S. Congress. Andrew Young had been there, but he was the only public official there. For me personally, it felt like I was taking a lot for granted with the passing of C.T. Vivian and John Lewis, and earlier this year, Dr. Lowery. I just took a moment to say I've had a chance to work with some real titans of the civil rights movement, and I shouldn't take that for granted. What they taught me, what I've learned, what I try to do, how I try to pattern my work for human rights here in the country and globally is because I've had those kinds of opportunities. And I was able to memorialize that moment because we called them at the last minute. There was no observance other than that observance here in Atlanta, Georgia, for the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. And they all came at their own expense from around the country. So it was a special moment for me.
Keith, do you know of one achievement that John Lewis would have considered most important?
The work done around the Voting Rights Act, I think that was something that he took pride in. And also his leadership of SNCC, because John believed then and up until the end that diversity and inclusion was the way to go. And at the time that he left SNCC, there was a big push for self-organization. And people understand both aspects of this, and I think John did too. But I think the Voting Rights Act's passage was something that he took as one of the major things he helped contribute to. And you could see that by his work with the voter education program later on, even after he left SNCC, And when the movement began to change, even he told the story that it was the assassination of Bobby Kennedy and, of course, Dr. King that made him decide to get into formal politics. So I think that the Voting Rights Act was the thing that he would have said was the greatest piece of work that he helped contribute to. But John wouldn't have looked at it as any kind of personal achievement. He would have talked about something that we all did together. And I visited the Jackson home in Selma this past anniversary of Bloody Sunday. And one of my colleagues, Joanna Jackson, who turned the house into a museum, she took me into a room and showed me where they washed their feet before the night before, before they went to march. And it was because they thought they might get killed. And to have that kind of courage with that march and the Edmund Pettus Bridge, that's one of the reasons I support the name change. I think naming it the John Lewis Bridge doesn't erase history. In fact, it validates the historical struggle of poor people and others to be included in this democratic process. So I think that that will be what history will associate John with. And as President Johnson said, it was like Appomattox in historical terms. And we did overcome. There are those reactionary forces right now who are trying to turn back the clock, but they have to do a lot of work to undo what has been done. I'm not a gambling man, but I would put my money on the march of history going in the right direction, because people, they haven't gotten the memo that Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben and the Redskins and the Mississippi State flag, they're all gone. They're relics now. And they may be symbolic, but it's symbolic of the changing times in this country. And I think that there are people that I know and I've spoken to that will be crawling to the polls if they have to. So November is very important. There are danger signs all around. That's what Portland represents. But I think that the passage of John and CT, Vivian, gives people like myself courage and hope to remain hopeful. So a friend of mine said, this is one of those moments where we have to have faith in our faith. And I think that we'll be okay because, as you know, I believe love will have the last word.
Do you know how Representative Lewis viewed today's racial justice activists like Black Lives Matter?
Yes, he thought they were a modern version of him and the SNCC, his SNCC colleagues.
We now have the benefit of these activists and the legacy of their success. So what do we desperately need to learn from these people that would be an example for what we need to be doing today?
These were ordinary people who made extraordinary contributions, and the involvement in the movement changed them. It transformed them. It was a Nicodemus moment. And I think that in the case of John Lewis and C.T. Vivian, they lived their values. And they did more than make statements. They put their bodies on the line. But in terms of what we all ought to take from that, even as difficult as this current moment is to make sure, one, that we understand what Dr. King meant when he said, we have to recognize that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We have to get out of our silos and to stop fighting on one front that I'm only concerned about, because it's very clear that we're facing a juggernaut that doesn't give, it almost makes you want to curse, but I won't defile your airways that way. But it makes you think about what CT said. What kind of people are you? John's understanding of injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere is what caused him to go and demonstrate for migrant rights and immigration rights, and to join in to and demonstrate at pride parades, and to say to the Black Lives Matter people with his quiet pose that I think will become an iconic picture for real, standing in what used to be Lafayette Square, now Black Lives Matter Square, representing the dignity of the movement that we now have to look back on and see how we can emulate those examples, and to recognize that if a sharecropper's son can make that kind of difference, then those of us who, whatever we do, wherever we come from, whatever station in life, can make a contribution to make this country what it ought to be. And I think that that's what they represented. And that's the kind of lives they led. And luckily, they had these long lives, and they were active to the end. And I think that if we can make a small contribution, we should look at their example. And it will make a difference. Dr. King's suggestion that you can only see the stars when it's dark. Well, this is a time for a lot of the stars to show up. And I think we're going to be okay. There are a lot of good young people out there right now. And while the civil rights movement is facing some challenges, we have excellent thought leaders. And I think we're in a big transition. There are issues on the table now that hadn't been before, like a guaranteed income and a living wage. These are issues that we will be able to resolve and to, again, as I said earlier, help make America what it ought to be.
Dr. Keith Jennings is president and CEO of the African American Center on Global Politics and Human Rights, a past recipient of the Interfaith Alliance Walter Cronkite Faith and Freedom Award. He worked closely with the late John Lewis on some of the issues closest to the congressman's heart. Keith, I can't tell you how thankful I am that we could get together today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. And I listen and I learn whenever I hear the show. So continue to do this work. And in this case, you really are doing the Lord's work.